Hi, Trevor Barone here, president of CAMP, Community Association Advisors for Management Professionals. Living in an association can come with many benefits like increased home value and shared costs, but it does come with challenges. Our volunteer board, advisors, and vendors service the community association industry throughout Central Florida, and we want to reduce the challenges managers, community association managers, licensed managers, face every day through access to tools, knowledge, and contacts who can get the job done right. Together, we can help raise the bar for our homeowners. Now, the primary way that we accomplish this is through our monthly events. And in April, we actually had two events. We had the board certification, which was combined with the trade show that Arias Bossinger put on. If you want to listen to that, check out our channel. And it's also the full video is online on YouTube as well. And then this event, which was actually on websites, social media, and online communication. Now, there's been some changes in the legislation, and that's what really spurred this conversation and the reason for this meeting. Attorney Seth Chitman was the keynote presenter on this course. Bianca Duffield was also there speaking on social media, how to best implement that and kind of some how-tos of certain platforms and how to maximize the effectiveness and also mitigate some of the risks. She's from Nishad Khan Law. And then we also had Joshua Adams, the self-described head honcho of Rock Paper Simple. They're a website development company who is starting to roll out a product that specializes in websites for associations. And he was also there to give us the nuts and bolts, kind of the implementation of having a website. So great resources. We condensed this down. It's a little over an hour and a half. I really hope you enjoy it. If you have more questions, shoot us an email, campcontact@gmail.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe. Check us out at our next meeting. I will actually be presenting on insurance negotiation. I'm really excited. We're also going to have an appraiser there talking about replacement cost appraisals, and it should be a really good one. We're really excited. Check out camp.net, that's CAAMP.net, for our upcoming events. And we'll see you there.
Well, thanks everyone for coming to this CAMP event on websites and the new statutory requirements for websites. And we're gonna have some discussion on social media as well. And I kinda wanna separate my talk into two general issues, the statutory framework for this new legislation, as well as the logistic, practical, and legal issues that I think may arise when implementing all these requirements for websites. Now, as many of you know, last year the legislature passed an addition to the Condominium Act requiring that condominium associations with 150 or more units maintain a website. And the legislature originally gave condominiums until July 1st, 2018 to get this done, to have a compliant website up and running. Well, that wasn't much time. So this year, with the encouragement of a lot of lobbying from folks like Roger and other lobbyists and, you know, good attorneys and et cetera, and good people that are involved in community associations, they pointed out some problems. And this year, the legislature extended the deadline to January 1st, 2019 to have websites up and running. Now, even though I know Brevard County is not dominated by associations, by condominiums with more than 150 units, there are some out there. But I think it's safe to say that this could be, that the thresholds for having a website could be changed and lowered. Depending on how all this, Roger's shaking his head no. Wow, okay, so he doesn't think so. There you have it. So maybe not. So the main points in the statute, and I'm not going to recite the statute to you, it's in your handout. I've given you all a handout, and we're not going to cover every little thing in that handout verbatim, but there's just a lot of food for thought in that handout. The first few pages of that handout you'll see is the statute, and you'll see in italics. And you'll notice that the underlining is the new legislation for this year is designated by the underlining and then some strike-throughs in there. And so the main points of the statute is that, one, that the website be independent, wholly owned and operated by the association, or if they're going to use a third party, like a management company, like many of you all, and we all know that associations will not, probably not expect their management companies to deal with this, or if they choose a third party vendor, such as a website developer, that there has to be some sort of signification that the associations owns, leases, has total control of this website. And so obviously if the association has their own website, that won't be a problem, and if they're owning it, but obviously they're going to need some expertise to deal with that. If they're having a third party vendor deal with a website or a management company, that could be more complex in demonstrating that the association really has control over this thing. And so some other things in the statute that are a big part of the statute is that the condominium associations are going to be required to post a pretty broad scope of official records, such as obviously the governing documents and any amendments thereto, contracts, bidding documents. Now bidding, take note that the bidding, condominiums are not required to bid everything. It's only if it's going to exceed 5% of their budget in the aggregate, including reserves, but a lot of condominiums do engage in bidding regardless, and that's great. But that stuff should be on the website. So contracts, meeting notices, the list is pretty long, but one thing interesting is that what has to be posted on the website as far as official records does not precisely track the official records that must be maintained by the association. So it would behoove the associations and management companies and vendors, if they're handling how this is being uploaded, to really compare what has to be uploaded. More might not be better always. I'm not sure. And with this website, there's got to be security components to it. The ability to assign secure usernames and passwords. So that's another facet of it. Getting to the logistics of this, I think some might think this is good, some might think this is bad. Of course, access to records and access to information is viewed as a good thing. Can't hurt. Makes it easier for members to get the records. I think you'll find once this is implemented, you'll find members, a lot more members, looking at records and scrutinizing the association's records. The bad, well, it's suddenly an extra layer of something else that a condominium has got to do, and they've got to comply with it. We all know that we've all experienced the owners that nitpick associations to death will file a DBPR administrative complaint against them on a weekly or monthly basis. So it also introduces a new layer of liability for the association. And I think that's going to really, we'll see how that pans out. I'm sure there'll be, after this is implemented, we'll see a host of arbitration decisions in the coming years on whether the website was truly independent, whether there was a willful neglect of uploading official records that should have been there, whether there was a willful or intentional and knowing event where the association has posted restricted materials. That's going to be another facet of the statute. Also addresses the fact that the association is going to be responsible for making sure restricted materials, such as documents subject to attorney-client privilege, lease information, personnel information, social security numbers, information on individual members that is not to be made available to all unit owners, that stuff is not included. Now, at least this year, the legislature also did a little favor for the associations in that they decided to say that they added a provision in saying that the association's posting of documents that are normally restricted, such as documents subject to attorney-client privilege or medical information, such as an owner that has applied to have an emotional support animal, if that medical information is uploaded, that if it was not willful and knowing, then and with an intention to do that, to upload the data, then the association may have some limitation of liability. But where that gets sticking is, well, what's willful and knowing? If you look at some past arbitration decisions on records requests and whether an association has complied with the records request requirement, and that could even be disseminating information that they shouldn't have been disseminating. The arbitrators sometimes have not been too kind to the condominium associations in determining if something was intentional or not. So it could be a big issue. Now, the other thing that was added to the statute is that, and this is good, I think this was a much needed provision, is that if the association neglects to post something and to put something like a meeting notice or something, whether it's a board or a members meeting, on that website, that the fact they didn't post it properly will not in itself invalidate the action that was undertaken or connected to that document. So meeting notice wasn't posted, board passes a resolution to hire a management company. Well, good news. That decision will not be invalidated just because the association did not post, say, a proper agenda saying that that was going to be considered during this board meeting. So that's good, a little limitation of liability there built into the statute. Now, getting back to independence, what's going to signify that? I think that for third parties in particular that are hosting the websites, whether it's a web company or it's a management company, the devil's going to be in the details, and the contracts are going to be really important in that. If it's just a website vendor, there'll be a single layer of contracts. If it's a management company and the management company is employing their own website vendor, there could be two layers of contracts that could affect the condominium association. So some of those contract provisions that I think associations should be paying attention to, and this list is not exhaustive, and they should consult with their association attorneys. I'm sure we've all seen a lot of associations that suddenly come to their attorney or management company and say, oh, we entered into this contract, and it's all of 2 pages, and it doesn't really say much. So these contracts will be important. Language signifying the independence, that the association has total control of the website. When I'm given these contracts to review, I love just going to the statute and almost reciting the verbatim language and then even some extra language to make it abundantly clear, so there is no doubt whatsoever. I've seen instances, cases where a vendor and an association have kind of thought they were upping each other by leaving something out of a contract, and that they'll say, well, we can interpret it this way. And the vendor might be saying to themselves, we can interpret it this way. It really is a bad idea. In fact, I was involved in a case recently, and the order came down, and it was a long case, it was so complex. And it was a construction defect case. And the judge's order came down, and it said, and it actually said this in the order, I was surprised. It said, I think both of these parties were sophisticated corporations, and I think they were trying to, they thought it was to their benefit to have this 2-page contract, but really it just screwed the whole case up and ended up costing each party in the tens of thousands of dollars. And the judge was upset that he had two sophisticated parties that took up 2 weeks of his time dealing with this 2-page contract. And so consult your attorneys. Other things that I think will be important in the contract will be transitions. What if the association fires the management company, or the management company fires the association, right? How is the transition, if the management company is the one involved dealing with the website, how is that transition going to occur? Is there going to be any downtime? Is there going to be any requirement that, okay, even though we've terminated the contract, your website, you're going to get another 30 days to implement the transition of getting a new management company or a new host or getting your own website? Other provisions, who's responsible for uploading the data? If it's a management company, yeah, they'll have some knowledge of the Condominium Act and the requirements. But if it's a website vendor, are they going to have knowledge of that? We don't know. That maybe that should be in the contract, that the website vendor signs something saying, I understand the provisions in the statute, and I'll, you know, or I've taken some measures to understand them. What are the repercussions for violating? What if the association is sued for violating a records request, but it was due to the website being down? Is the association going to then go to the vendor or the management company and saying, hey, what's the deal? Well, I'll tell you, the member's not going to sue the website vendor or the management company. They're going to sue the association, especially because there's an attorney's fees provision in the Condominium Act, and they'll have no trouble getting an attorney to represent them in an easy case. And so that means, is the association then going to go and say, we had nothing to do with this? It was the website vendor. It was the management company. They screwed this whole thing up. So my point is, maybe some indemnification provisions should be in the contract, or that should at least be thought about. Other logistical issues, repercussions for non-compliance, we address that. I think the members will have some expectations for a pretty good website here. So we get into the realm, is it going to be acceptable for a volunteer, an owner, for instance, that has some expertise or thinks they have expertise, to make a secure website that's capable of doling out secure usernames and passwords and uploading this data? That might not be the greatest idea in this instance. So who is going to upload that data? Getting to that point, there probably should be a designated person that does that and that knows what data should and should not be uploaded. The proposition that the association, the designated person on the board or a committee member or a website vendor or a management company can just take a stack of documents, scan them, and uploading, I don't know if that's going to work so well, or if it's going to make members that happy that it's not organized in some fashion. Members may expect search functions. Original documents still are going to have to be stored. Original claims of lien should be stored. Maybe some of you have your attorneys do that. Some attorneys put it right back to the association. Original certificates of amendments. So there's still going to have to be some system of maintaining storage of those documents. Backing up data, another contract provision. How is that data going to be backed up? Frequency of uploading. How often is that going to be uploaded? As soon as it happens, are we going to be doing one a day, two a day? Are we going to be doing this exercise once a month? We don't know. The legislature hasn't given much direction in that. Before this website requirement, it was very simple. We just took the document, boom, put it in the official records. End of story. Task done. Now it's a little different. There's going to be this system now where someone's going to have to make sure these documents get uploaded. Records requests, I think that's going to be a big issue. How are you going to handle records requests? The easy way, my advice is to just continue following the statute. Documentation. Somebody makes a records request, I think it might be a bad idea just to simply respond to a a records request saying, go to the website. Might work, might not. On the risk that it might not, what if that record is not there? Is that a violation of the records request law? The records request law is pretty clear. If you don't make the document available within 10 days, thank you, Roger. I always get the 5 and 10 mixed up, but then it's a violation. And if someone sends the request via certified mail, that's an easy case for them. It doesn't even matter if the association had a good excuse. So there you have it. I wouldn't just direct the member to the website. I don't think it would hurt to direct them to the website and saying, by the way, you know these documents are posted on our website, but I would still go through the process of inviting them and saying, yes, this is a response to your records request. When would you like to review this record? Or if the association, if it's a very simple records request and you can show that you're simply giving them the document, that's the easiest thing to do. And then as a little PS, by the way, Mr. So-and-so, this record is available on the website for future use. Security issues, I think that'll be huge. I'm hoping Josh, where is Josh? I saw him, there he is. Josh is a great guy, met him last week at the wonderful event that Trevor and Sonia put on for the board certification. That was fantastic. And Josh was there, I got to talk to him, and I'm hoping he can chime in on security issues. This was kind of a funny arrangement because I'm really non-techie. I don't have a website. I don't really rely on my phone that much. I do just fine with that. I try to give people a good service, but maybe that's bad. Maybe I should be. But I think it's ironic that Trevor got me to give this presentation. But so I'm thankful that we got Bianca and Josh here to kind of chime in and say, well, actually, Seth, you're wrong on this technical side. That won't be that hard to deal with logistically in figuring out who's going to upload this information. One thing I want to go back to, I think a hallmark to the independence will be a URL address that belongs to the association, and the association can just hang on to it, and they're paying for it too, if it's their own website. And so that's key, and that maybe that seemed obvious to everybody, but I didn't want to mention that because I think that's going to be okay. That would be great, Josh. And if anyone has any questions and you want to chime in on something I'm saying, don't hesitate to do so. Storage of facilities, I think, and this goes along with cost. How expensive is this going to be? I've heard ranges from under $10,000, which seems like a pretty good deal to me, and I've heard Josh and I were talking about this, of vendors looking for tens of thousands of dollars to deal with this and to deal with making sure this is compliant on a month-to-month basis. Getting back to storage capability, it's going to have to be expanded. So budgets are going to have to be adjusted to account for that. This new website requirements, and we all know owners love spending money and seeing additional things in the budget. One thing interesting in the statute that wasn't addressed, unfortunately, is estoppel certificates. We all know that last year, the legislature is now being very specific as to what must be included for homeowners associations, condominiums, and co-ops as to what they have to provide for an estoppel certificate. Now, one thing interesting, though, is all those statutes for condos, 718, 720, and 719, in that provision addressing estoppel certificates, it says there must be somebody on your website designated as a contact person. But yet, what's strange is that they don't put that 150 threshold in there. Well, what does that mean? Does it mean if an association with less than 150 units happens to have a website, they better have that information? I think it does, probably. But I think it's an area of the law that needs to be clarified a little bit, that under that estoppel section that says, this is not meant to signify that associations, condominiums in particular, less than 150 units or HOAs or co-ops are required to maintain a website. And so that's a little bit of a problem. Arbitration, it's pretty loosey-goosey. As far as if it gets to a final hearing and we're actually looking at evidence. And I can guarantee you, arbitrators are going to be sitting at their desk if we have a website dispute, and they will get right on that website and ask to try to access it. I don't, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I can envision that, you know, having been in other arbitration proceedings where I'm surprised, frankly, at some of the questions that the arbitrator asks, and they want to get right on there. When I was talking with Roger earlier, and I left this out of my presentation, but the word insurance came out of his mouth, and that was an excellent point. You got to let your insurance company know what's going on if you have a website.
Not that expensive, but it will cover your rear end.
I want to talk about intellectual property a little bit, because I envision when the association implements their website, they're going to have a lot of members wanting to have this, it to be expanded as to what is required under the statute, to have rental listings, sales listings, social functions, links to here, links to there, forums, chat rooms, I don't know. And so I would say some care needs to be given as to what kind of information is uploaded to protect the association from copyright infringement. Now, it's a federal law, and it basically says any original work, which is expansive, music, pictures, photographs, any original work cannot be used in a public place. Now, what's interesting is that courts have said, well, we think a public place is also kind of includes semi-public places. And courts have even gone as far as saying, oh, by the way, I think a condominium association, the common elements, is a public place for purposes of interpreting this statute. Now, I think it goes without saying, the website is a common element now. Mm-hmm. And so who's gonna make sure that the owner that has pulled a stock picture of something out, that's a great photograph, suddenly uploads it, and it's, you know, they don't have permission from the owner of that piece of material. You know, the sky's the limit as to what could happen with copyright infringement. And so I think the association would be looked at as the liable party. So, you know, I don't see a lot of copyright infringement cases, and I think associations probably already do that a little bit. I don't know, but I've seen cases where I'm like, well, where'd you get that picture? I mean, did you really get permission from the owner to use that? But it's an interesting component of this whole thing that I don't know if a lot of associations have thought about much. And I'm hoping Josh will talk a little bit more about security, but this is kind of a nice segue to get into social media, because I think also a lot of members may want to link this to social media. Right now it doesn't say it. There's nothing in the statute about that preventing the association from letting this meld into a recreational, you know, to include recreational facets of the for the associations, such as, when are we going to start this tennis league? Still comply with the records request, with the maintenance of official records portion of the statute. And that's a different portion of the statute. So right now, I don't see the websites as being the official archive of official records. It has a fairly wide scope of official records. That who knows if that'll change in the future? I just don't know. So I think from a practical standpoint, yeah, you would think, look, I'm giving you access, clearly. And the statute does let associations simply take the record, scan it, and shoot it over to them as complying with an official records request. So I see what you're saying, that from a practical standpoint, that seems to comply with it, but I would be hesitant to assume that complies with it.
And if I may add to that, technologically that makes sense. Like that's my response as a web guy, as a marketing guy. I go, well, heck, you got a login, that makes sense. But part of that comes down to what was mentioned earlier by this gentleman was if it is not super easy and super easy, and that's defined by the user, not by you, not by me, etc. They can claim they couldn't get to it easily. And that could be any, I mean, it could be a disability. It could be a whole nother issue. Maybe they have a sight disability. Maybe they have another disability, they can't access it, right?
So this is interesting. I'll get to your question, one point. The disability raised an amazing point. One, people don't have computers, and this is the second thing. So my mother has severe motion sickness. She tells me that she will not use a computer, even though all her five kids do heavily, except me, I guess. But and she says that the whole mouse going across the screen gives me motion sickness. Interesting point. Yeah.
Bianca deferred since we're on the subject. I'm going to just step up. So I apologize for my tardiness. I had on my calendar for 12:30, so I apologize that I was a little late. My focus here is to be very interactive. So he's already covered some of the law, some of the aspects. So I'm looking for questions. And I've already got some material already kind of thrown out here. And I'm happy to be very interactive with it. Ask technical questions, ask security questions. I want to be helpful today. So we can talk about how hard it is to do certain things like we're talking about. What is the security aspect? Who's responsible for loading stuff? Who's responsible for remembering what needs to be loaded? All that stuff I'm happy to cover, but again, I want to cover what helps you guys. So we'll just dive into it. One of the things that was being brought up about was about control, and this is super important, right? Because we have the management company, we have the association, you have a web design company. And one of the things he mentioned a moment ago was you can't use the management company's website because you don't control it. And that's exactly right. In the statute, and again, I'd be very careful quoting law stuff. That's what Seth is here for. He's gone. Now I'm in trouble. But basically that idea that you have to control it. The association has to have control. Now, it doesn't mean they have to technically own it. It does say they can rent it, lease it, but they have to control it. So the problem is if they lose control, that's on them. That's on the association. So because they whatever the layer of contract was, they lost relationship with the management company. The management company had relationship with the web company. Well, shoot, now I lost control. He mentioned a provision of 30 days to transfer things. That's not enough time. Typically, you've got 2 to 4 weeks of planning happening with a web company before you even get into things. So to be able to say, oh crap, I'm losing my website because I lost my relationship with my management company. Hey, Rock, Paper, Simple, or hey, other HOA, company that can make HOA websites or condo association websites, can you get me a website? They're going to say, yeah, and, give us a month or two or three, and then you can load your data in there, but my other website's going away in 30 days. Well, you're in trouble. So that's really important in the contracts, understanding that you need more time than 30 days to be at a pivot. So understanding if you've got a deal with somebody, you need to be able to have that time accounted for. My website's not going down in 30 days because you don't have time to hurry up and spin something up like this and ensure everything's in place. So that was one thing I wanted to cover, was being able to pivot and covering that idea that, hey, who controls that? Ideally, your relationship between association and web company is connected. There's no middleman. Even if the management company helped facilitate it, all of our relationships have been connected. Typically, the management company connects us, they facilitate, they'll even be our point of contact, which is fine, but the relationship is direct. That way there's no concern with one or the other firing the other. You have 30 days to move things, and oh shoot, we're in trouble. So I just wanted to cover that. Also diving into the complexity aspect, because one of the things, when we first became aware of this law, one of our clients is in insurance, and they gave us a call and said, hey, I've got a bunch of condo associations freaking out about this law, and they've had some meetings, et cetera, and they've got some guys that are kind of coming in, and I feel like they're fear-mongering, and they're quoting them $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 to fix this problem. I'm like, Kirk, just have them call me. That's not the case. It doesn't need to be a $40,000 fix. That's silly. Now, does it mean that there's some associations out there that want all these big fancy bells and whistles and stuff and might build a $40,000 website? Sure, that's fine. But it's not because they need to be compliant. It's because they want other things. So that said, complexities, it does sound scary. The nice thing is, though, again, a lot of these technologies exist. They've been done. They've been built. Don't let somebody fool you into saying, oh, I got to build a totally brand new thing for this. Well, yeah, there's some things we have to do from a technology standpoint that are different. But really, once you build it, now you're taking that system, bringing it over to the next one, making some tweaks for what they need and what their functionality is. But most of the customization happens with the other elements of the business website, being the marketing aspect, being the any interaction, being reservation forms, being other things that they need. More of the work is happening there, if that makes sense. So we've had some come in and say, well, I want a beautiful association website that not only helps fulfill these legal requirements, but we want to help bring our property values up and look beautiful when people are buying into our neighborhood, and we want to be able to have all this information there, and it's a really nice, robust marketing site. Well, that's a little bit more involved than somebody comes and says, well, I just need the document management. I just need to be compliant. It's a little less involved, if that makes sense, to do that. We have one now that came in, like I said, we just launched it recently, an HOA that wanted a beautiful site. We had another one come in, HOA, that said, honestly, we want a three-page website with a link into the information that they can log in and get to that's protected. Give us a few layers of logins, one for the residents, one for the board, one for an admin, and you know different layers of protected documents for those. That was mentioned earlier, actually. Just having the different layers of logins and credentials, done. And they're literally a three-page website with the document management system. That's a lot less involved, a lot less costly than building the full-blown business marketing website. So just wanted to, those were the two things that threw out to me. I've got a couple other things I can cover, but what questions do we have from a technical standpoint, from a, and I actually didn't get to introduce myself, I apologize. Let me do a quick introduction. I'm Joshua Adams, I'm the head honcho of Rock Paper Simple. We're a digital marketing agency. We build websites, develop brands, do digital marketing, drive traffic to websites. That's the core. My background is, before I got into marketing and branding, about 8 years ago, I was a developer. I've been programming since I was 11 years old. I know I can program in more languages than I can. I could never learn spoken languages, but typed languages, I'm good. But I know how to, I mean, I was coding in ColdFusion at 14. It's a language you're not supposed to be coding in at 14. And so my background is development, design, that kind of aspect. And currently, Rock Paper Simple, we are a digital agency. So everything from the branding to the website implementation and then bringing that technical aspect and plugging that in. So as far as technical questions, I'm happy to answer whatever I can and go from there. So do I have any other questions or anything before I dive? I have a few other ideas that I can cover. Great. Okay. So, sure. Linking it to social media offsite, I haven't really had a problem with it. One of the things that I've run into is there are some cases where the terms and conditions need to talk about that. Okay, so that if I were to pick one topic where you know do we have a problem, I haven't had any problems, but we're normally proactive with that anyways. I don't like to have problems. I'd like to be proactive. Is making sure in your terms and conditions you talk about the fact that hey, XYZ Association is not responsible for what's on third-party websites that may link to yada, 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 yada.
Here's the link.
Yes, exactly.
And let it go there, and it becomes their problem.
It's their problem. So in the terms and conditions, which is typically linked in the footer of your website, you mentioned third-party links. It's typically a little blurb, a little paragraph. It's great to have your attorney look at it. Just make sure. We have a boilerplate we use. We always say, hey, you have to have your attorney look at this. We're not taking responsibility. Again, lawyer things, I'm scared. That's why Seth's here. but yeah, absolutely. That's your biggest concern when it comes to off links of social media. And then from a marketing perspective, making sure that it's very clear, that it opens in a new tab, that when it's not, doesn't become a conversion link if we're trying to get somebody interested in something.
Because our website, which is the SCCA site, we've gotten permission from all the different people that we link to.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of that is people tell me this is meaningless. Where can I find this information? Take it off my website, you won't get into trouble.
Right.
Because once they take it off my website, it's classified public.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can send it around to all their friends, do whatever they want with it.
Right, right.
And that's something else that a lot of people don't realize. They go and they find information in the newspapers or in the different things, and they say, boy, my people find this interesting. I'll post it. not that easy.
Right. Well, and you open yourself up to some liabilities. Definitely. Definitely. You had to.
Just a concern.
Yeah.
Just from my reading of the statute and my understanding of this business, I think one of the greatest risks is revision control.
Mm.
So just some feedback for the team. When we're talking about revision control and certain documents that are almost like living documents,
right,
amended quite often.
Right.
Someone has a request for a document that was amended and redacted yesterday. How does one ensure through this portal that they're providing accurate revision control such that the person doesn't get an outdated document and say, you guys messed me up?
Right. So there is the option to have living documents where you have a revision control. So typically, these type of systems are built so that you have a repository, it's a file structure, etc. And what you can also do is have a file that it's not really even a file. To the user, it looks like a file. To the back end, it's just a database entry that says this is the name of the file. And then every time they can go and say, all right, update this file, what it does is it just takes that old version of it and pushes it down and brings the new one in, and it's no longer available. The only person that could get to it would be an admin or a developer, et cetera. And now when they click on that button, that's what they're getting, that's what they're seeing. So that would protect technologically from accidentally delivering the wrong one, rather than the typical way, which is to just upload another one.
Right.
Right. And now you go in the server and you do the search. We were talking about how hard it is to find things. You do a search for, give me an example of a document.
Meeting notes.
Something that would be evolving. Meeting notes wouldn't really evolve. Bylaws or something, right? So bylaws might evolve. Rather than having bylaws version 1.2, 1.8, 1.8888, 999, you know, and you do a search and there's like 20 of them. Oh, shoot, which one do I download? And then people don't know what did, that 1.02 is less in version than 1.12. You know, they don't know what, you know. They don't know which one to download. This alleviates that because they're not even available.
But the this that you're referring to, and then I'll get off the stage.
Sure.
This that you're referring to is a service.
If I'm reading it correctly. You mean the component or?
Right, because the authoring of a database, which mm-hmm. in essence the website is.
Correct.
That's not done by the hobbyist.
No.
That's
a service.
As condo associations, we need to be mindful of the fact that professionals should be employed
definitely
to do this type of service because revision control can probably get us into more hot water than we realize now.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that with a hobbyist programming. I mean, unless you got a really good hobbyist. I mean, the guy could be really good, you know.
Yeah. A lot of condo folks, I'm sure, are good with web mm-hmm. development. And
but there's a difference between web design and web development and this system, right? So for example, web design, I know a lot of people that can throw up a website. Plenty of cousins and nephews, right? That's the whole joke. My cousin knows, you know, my nephew, plenty of people can spin up a quick website that just looks pretty, I guess you could say that. But can it do database control and then the advanced? I mean, those elements are typically outside the realm of a hobbyist. Yes.
No, thank you. That's the message I wanted to hear.
Yes, yes. Did you have something?
Oh, no.
Okay. You're just on backup in case I need law help.
I thought I heard something come up that, and then it was addressed.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Seth has got my back. So that, I think that covers that component of it. Understanding that the most complex part of this is not the website build, it's not even the marketing site, the pretty pictures, all that. Making sure that any photography used on the site is copyright free, that's super important. Making sure that was purchased, that you're allowed to use that. Typically that problem comes in with user generated content, but sometimes it can come into play with just building the site. I have had clients come to us and previously they got sued because the other web developer built their website and used a copyrighted photo on the front. It was the Humane Society. The poor Humane Society got sued because somebody put a picture of dogs on there that wasn't theirs. And it wasn't even their own, it wasn't even their fault. It was some web guy, right? So those are things to be concerned about, but typically that happens with user-generated content, as was mentioned earlier. As long as you're working with a professional, typically you've got copyright-free photography. You normally run into that with hobbyists, unfortunately, because they don't have a resource. Agencies, I mean, we pay $300 a month to have access to those kind of things, those kind of pictures that are copyright free, et cetera. So just to touch on that briefly. The other aspect of it, that core login system, again, that's been built. You know, we were fortunate enough to really, and I joke, is people say, well, what got you into doing websites for HOAs and condo associations? I said, frankly, we stumbled upon it. We had a couple clients that needed it. We built it for them. And then we had that insurance friend call us up, say, hey, I got like three of them, they need help. Do you have something? Like, what does it need to do? Here's the law. We reached out to a few attorney friends of ours, did some research on it, and says, hey, the system we built does most of this. Let's just add to it, be able to offer an affordable option, and really just plug it into what we were already doing. So we already had small business packages and starters and all these things that we were doing for different businesses, we just found a way to plug and play it, if that makes sense. There's still a level of customization that's needed, but for the most part, all the concerns are taken care of, if that makes sense. So any questions on that before I dive into the maintenance aspect? So one of the other things that was brought up earlier was, how do we maintain this? Who updates this? Who decides what needs to go up, et cetera? And the answer is, it really kind of varies. A lot of companies, a lot of associations really want to be hands-off. They don't want to see the back end. They don't want to see what's in there. But at the same time, the web company, you know, we're a bunch of programmers and designers, et cetera. We're not association experts. We're not attorneys. We're not going to know every little detail going on in your organization. You know, I just said, well, bylaws, right? Right? Bylaws, yeah. I mean, so we get it. I mean, I've sat on some boards. I get how that works. Scott's here. He's on our team, and he's the president of his association. But, like, we get it. But at the same time, we're going to need to know. So typically what we do is we set a point of contact. Who is that point of contact? Sometimes it's within the association itself. Sometimes it's a management company as a point of contact. And that person is feeding us information. And that could be on a regular basis. It could be weekly. It could be monthly. It needs to be obviously fast enough that we're not running into trouble. And I'm not going to contend on how often it needs to be. That would be a question for Seth. How often does it need to be updated? We're from a technology standpoint, can do that as often as you like. We have clients who will go and do it themselves. We have clients that say, hey, here's all the data. Can you please upload this for us? They'll drop off a thumb drive. They'll send it to us in a secure email. Or they'll do different things. So that how you manage the data is really going to depend on that association, that management company, that web vendor. So it varies. It really does.
If an association came to you and said, we want you to handle everything, Josh. We just want to be able to deliver a bunch of documents to you and you figure this out.
We're actually okay with that if they're delivering the documents. If they're delivering the documents, we're okay with that. We're actually okay with that. Now, here's the problem. Not a problem. There's two things to think about there. Number one, that's a lot of work, and that's okay. We don't mind billing them. we really don't. Number two, we can't validate, hey, you've given us everything we need. Like, we can look at it and go, this looks like everything, but it's not our job to be their legal counsel and say, yep, you've check, you've got it all. Now, we can give them a checklist of this is what we see, this is what we've talked to our attorneys, what they say you need. But it's not up to us to determine they've given us, delivered us everything that's up to date. I would have no idea if they missed sending me a notice for a meeting, an emergency vote meeting. I would have no idea unless a contact told me.
What I'm thinking of more is if they give you a stack of documents and there happens to be something in there that should have never been uploaded.
Gotcha.
And you do it. And,
right.
And you upload it. What, in your view, happens with your company?
So for our company, we actually have a clause in our contract that says we're not liable for that. If they've given it to us, they've guaranteed that information is correct, that it is allowed to be uploaded, that it is theirs to be given to us. That's actually in every one of our contracts in terms of, if you give me something to put on your website, that's not my fault if you stole it, which we've had happen. We actually had one client send us about 30 pages of content. We go to work on it and we're going, this just seems fishy. We Googled a portion of the content and found out they went to their biggest competitor, copied all their content, and sent it to us and said, here. And we're like, your contract says you can't do that. And we wouldn't do it. We refused to do it. They eventually, actually, I think paid us, I think if I remember correctly, Scott, they paid us to write the content, which was what they should have done in the first place.
It was much better than the original content.
It was better. But the point there was, to protect ourselves, we have to say, hey, I mean, I would have no way of knowing you slipped a piece of paper in there that I didn't know wasn't allowed to be shared, if that makes sense. Yeah, well, we've thankfully been able to work with some, so we kind of get an idea, picture from them on what really matters to them. And it varies from association to association. From the marketing aspect, maybe they're trying to attract other types of homeowners, et cetera. Maybe they want to drive property values up and they feel like this would help do that. I mean, when you're looking to move into a community, what do? You Google the community and see what you can learn about it. Well, you come up with this very boring website that looks like it was from 12 years ago and somebody, some hobbyist, built it. Maybe they're not even a hobbyist. Maybe they just tried, you know. Then you get one perception of it. But you pull it up and you get beautiful pictures. You get to see the amenities. You get to see, you know, a lane down the, you know, showing the homes lined up and how pretty it is and all the flowers blooming. And, I mean, that makes you feel something and it can help you sell a home, right? So that helps, that there's a value there. There's others really just want to communicate information, emergency warnings. They want to communicate when trash day is. I mean, I specifically had one lady, super important to her that they get to communicate trash day. Like that was like her big thing. I know it was every meeting she mentioned trash day. Like, okay, we got trash day on there, I promise. But it was this kind of information, quickly tabulated, et cetera, and you got your trash days and all these other information. Some of them want them to be able to put, to list their homes, actually for sale up there, to be able to have that, or lease. Those are some things that are requested, not always, but requested. Do we want a repository for a place to list garage sales or happenings, events? Events is a big one. Want to have events that are happening, parties or celebrations or cookouts or garage sales, et cetera.
They're like
hurricane prepared. Well, actually, that's some. Yeah, absolutely. One of them has a tab for that. One of our clients has a tab for that. What do we do in a hurricane? You had a
place for realtors to go to learn what they're selling about that community.
Exactly. A real estate guide. We actually did that for one of them where they wanted a real estate guide. So when a realtor was selling a home in the community, they could send them the link to it. And then go and here's all the details of the community and so they can find it. Sometimes that's public, sometimes that's actually password protected, just with a single password for the realtors to be given. So there's a lot of dynamic reasons to have a website, whether it be just to promote, to communicate, to be compliant with laws, and the list goes on with different ideas that we've seen. Landmarks, good restaurants to go to, I mean, the whole list goes on.
So that goes back to what he was saying, and what I was saying. This is a living map website.
Yes.
And not it's going to turn into not just a business website, it's going to turn into their website.
Correct.
Which is going to be overseen by a lot of different things with the terms and conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Has got to constantly be reviewed and addressed because of content being added and the URLs being added to that website.
Well, as long
it's
as
going to be kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, and as long as you address third-party links, that can really cover you in a more of a blanket layer in terms of, so you don't have to address every link on the website, for example. So if you have third-party links to, let's say, other vendors, social media platforms, et cetera, your terms and conditions just needs to cover those types. Exactly. Now, that said, I would still consult an attorney about, hey, does this cover me for these links, yeah. If that makes sense. From our experience, that's what we've done to keep it protected. We've sent that in. That's been approved by other attorneys. That's the best I can say. Not legal advice, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I always add that, yada, 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 yada in the end. What do you mean? I said it. You don't know what yada, yada means? So if that addresses that. The site itself, like I said, some want more features. Some want it to be more business-like. So, you know, the two typically your most important features of a website for an association is typically from a marketing sense to build value. I would say three, actually, build value. Second, communication, any kind of communication. I mean, just give a bunch of ideas. And third, compliance, documents, et cetera. So those are the things to think about. We mentioned backups, et cetera, how important that is. Make sure the site's being backed up on a daily basis. So if it's being done right, it's backed up every night, sometime between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. That's typically when it's being backed up every day. If something happens, you can roll back one day. You haven't lost everything. We just had a client the other day. They just signed on with us, and like a week into signing on with us, we're getting ready, doing the planning. We haven't even touched their website yet. Somebody deleted everything. Like, we don't even know how it happened. She calls us up, goes, our website's gone. I'm like, well, we don't even have access yet, so it wasn't us. And they gave us access, like, go in and literally, like, all the files, everything was just deleted. Somebody just went in and just hacked it. I don't even know what, it didn't even show signs of somebody hacking the site.
Obvious.
I think a hobbyist hit the wrong button, to be honest. But this was a technology company, surprisingly, so maybe it was a begrudged employee, I don't know. I'm not picking on you. we just hear that a lot when people come in. Oh, yeah, my nephew built it. Yeah, I could tell. It hurts my heart. But that was one where I said, okay, great, call your host, tell them it got screwed up yesterday, roll it back one day or a week or whatever you've got. They don't have a backup. Site's gone, sorry. We'll be flexible. We'll put up a landing page for you while we're building your site, but typical good marketing site takes, 2.5-3 months to build. So you're going to have a landing page for now. So that that's why backups is so important. Hacking is one of the big concerns. There's a ton of layers of discussion there, making sure the site is secure, you've got an SSL certificate installed, you're forcing users to use the SSL, because if you don't actually force it, it won't go by default. You want to make sure that the server on it is secure, the server itself is secure, so most websites are hosted on a hosting platform. So the way hosting works is you have your domain name, everybody's familiar with a domain name, right? So rockpapersimple.com, right? xyzassociation.com is your domain name. That's not your website, just your domain name. It points somewhere. That's all it is. It's just a pointer. It just points to where it's something, right? So if I, let's say the website was a physical object. This is the website, and I put it here. The domain just points it. So when I type in xyzassociation.com, go there. There's the files, there's the images, there's everything. If I move it to a different website host over here, different, you know, I moved it from HostGator to GoDaddy. Don't use either of those. I have to take the domain and point it over there. Does that make sense? That's domain name, hosting. Those are the two different things. Something Seth mentioned, super important, I almost forgot to mention, make sure you own your domain name, not your management company, and certainly not your web design company, okay? Web design companies love to own domain names. Why? Because the moment you go to leave, I go, bye, I have the domain name. They can't go anywhere, they're stuck, right? And and I'll charge you X amount of dollars to point it, you know, somewhere, you know, or whatever, you know. Oh no, I'm keeping it, I'm gonna sell it to somebody else, your competitor, right? They can do that, they have the right to do that. The problem is, and again, you know, talk to the lawyer for more details, but the problem there is it's not theirs. And it could theoretically come down to a problem with the statute in terms of control and own, right? If I don't control and own the domain name, technically nobody can get to my website. Crap. So it's kind of an Achilles heel. It's an easy one to forget, easy one to overlook. It's $20, you know, $20 to $40, depending which one you go with, a year to have a domain name. For goodness sake, own your own domain name.
So one thing I wanted to ask you, Josh, is that we all know, is, you know, all the CAMs here especially, and the attorneys know how heated disputes can get with unit owners and how personal they can get sometimes. And
yep.
Have you run into any situations where owners are trying to beat the association to the punch, take their obvious domain name and keep it for themselves, purely for...
I've seen it happen with that. I've seen it happen with employees or ex-employees.
So would you agree that if an association knows they have to comply with it, hurry up and get their domain?
Get the domain. Even if you're not ready to do something else just yet, get the domain. It's $20, for goodness sake. Go, you know, just get it, the domain. That's a hard one to come back on. We actually had one client where they sat there, and we're big on, we don't want to buy your domain. Please don't make us buy your domain. Doesn't make sense. Out of integrity, you should have your domain. If our whole team, there's 10 of us, somehow dies in the same day, I don't know, and you can't get your data, you can't get your domain, you're stuck, right? You should control your domain, okay? So that's the first thing. We had one come in, can you buy our domain? No, you should really buy it. Okay, we'll buy it. Well, they forgot. They thought we were gonna do it. So.
Josh, sorry, I wanna make sure we get to the social.
Yeah, sure, I'll wrap up.
Hi everyone, good afternoon. I'm Bianca. I'm with Nishad Khan PL, but previously I was with the association law firm. So many years of just association work and marketing. I am the communications director. So I have had to deal with all sorts of marketing and communications crises, whether it's within association or within the legal scope. So I definitely have had some years of experience in dealing with all of the problems, and I know sometimes it seems like a headache, especially with the chaos that the web can bring on. I've seen the fraudulent sites that are put up that are supposed to look like the associations. I've seen the fraudulent social sites that are put up that are supposed to, I mean, they're fraudulently representing themselves as the association. So when I originally put this course together, Social Media 101, that was part of the concern that was meant to address it. And of course, if you do have a situation where someone is fraudulently saying that they are a representative or speak for the association, that is something you're going to want to get an attorney involved in, get some cease and desist out there. You might not be able to get control of domain because, like Joshua was saying, once you get the domain, it's yours. Potentially, you can pay someone if they've got that domain name, you know, like thesteelers.com or whatever, you know. If that's the case, potentially you can buy it. Especially on GoDaddy, if that's where you're buying your domains, it says buy it for X amount, sometimes the one that you want. So it can depend, you know. But if somebody is fraudulently pretending to be an association, and especially if they're saying all sorts of defamatory things, you're going to want to get a cease and desist out there. You're going to want to bring an attorney into the mix there because it is damaging. Part of social media, and I know there's a lot of resistance, but part of the idea with social media is that people can speak their opinion. Social media is a two-way communication channel, and if it's just one way, sometimes that's not enough. But the association is a business, and you should look at it like a business. So it needs to be professionally run, it needs to be professionally monitored. And by that, we have all sorts of things. Oh, we can plug it in, yeah? Oh, thanks. We have a presentation. It's pretty simple. So if you got the handout with Social Media 101, a lot of your questions will probably be answered there. The first thing a lot of people ask me about social media or their big concerns with social media is it's a free-for-all and members of the community are going to go on there and say, this board member ruined my life. Oh, you know, we don't want that. So let's say you have a Facebook page for the association. It's like setting up a business page. That's the way you're gonna wanna do it. Some people have groups, and there's a problem with groups. In a group, it's a freewheeling discussion. Anyone can say, post, comment, whatever they'd like. That's an issue. We don't want everyone's opinion on how this association is run. That's why we have a board, and that's why we elect a board, right? Their opinion matters at this point. Now, you have meetings where the whole community is at liberty to speak and have everything taken care of in that regard. To me, social media is not the appropriate place to vent frustrations and all that. So with that in mind, if you are in the process or you have some sort of Facebook page set up, go ahead and make sure it's not a group. A group is impossible to monitor because you have to individually invite people to it, which means someone has to be Facebook friends with everybody in the community. Oh my gosh, what a headache, right? If you have a Facebook page, and mind you, it does have to be administered by actual Facebook users. So that's where you're bringing in a little of the personal into the professional. And that can be problematic. Personally, I have two Facebook pages, a personal one and a professional one. Because no one at work cares about how much fun I had tailgating in college, right? So we've got it separated, and that's okay. But if you've got one Facebook account, that's great. You're gonna want certain admins, and you're gonna wanna agree on as a board and vote in a social media plan. That can dictate how many admins, how many users, and the various details of the social media things you're trying to portray. Almost everyone's gonna wanna do Facebook. First of all, it's the easiest to control. You can limit comments. You can limit all sorts of things. You can limit discussion. In fact, you can make it so if somebody does want to comment, especially if it's something fun or engaging, that's the point of social media, right? It's important to be engaging, especially if it's a community. You want it to be nice for your neighbors or whoever to be like, this was a great event, thanks. That should be part of it. So I like permissions on Facebook because you can make it so that people can comment, but the comment has to be approved. That's my favorite way to do it. You had a great time at this event, I'm so happy, and they leave a little comment on this picture, great, it has to be approved. You can make it so that people cannot post, but they can only comment on posts. That's what we have on our Facebook page for the business because, well, to be fair, we get nothing but positive comments on the Facebook page, but I have the ability to delete, and nobody can post. They can only comment on what I've posted. So there are various levels of protections. There are various levels of permissions. There are certain numbers of admin that you can have, and admins have restricted access based on who you want to put out there. So it does depend on how much two-way communication you want, but, you know, mind you, it is social media. It is meant to have a little two-way communication. Now, if you're in a community where that's just too much freedom, then that's your discretion. And that's okay, because with certain tools on social media sites, you are able to control it, which I like. So social media is definitely a little bit more fun, you know, than the websites. Like, oh my gosh, that's so much, and it sounds so scary. It doesn't have to be scary. Probably before this website compliance issue was here, maybe there was a Facebook page that was almost acting as a website. A lot of businesses do that. I know restaurants who were like, eh, I don't need a website, I've got a Facebook page. Well, that's fine, we can all find them pretty much. I mean, most people are on Facebook now. And if they're not, then they are in the minority. So just a couple rules to think of. There's no such thing as a social media expert. I'm up here, I'm not an expert, you know. I know a lot, but so do a lot of people. If you want a pro, you can have a pro, and that's great. I do professional social media at work, but guess what? There are still things on various social media sites, because don't get me wrong, there are tons of social media sites, and I don't know everything about all of these social sites, you know? So there's something to think about, so no, don't be scared. We can all be an expert in our own right in a little bit of a way. And number two, you are what you share or don't share. If you are not on social media, that says something. So you need to think about that, because the association is a business, right? So if we're not engaging and we don't have especially a Facebook presence, it does say something, because then there's no interaction and then there's no way for a lot of members to connect. So, all right, for the purposes of this course or this presentation, we're only gonna discuss the big seven, which to me are the ones that are most likely, and some of them definitely not, going to be used by an association for various purposes. So there is a scale of professionalism. Something I will kind of touch on is that each social media site kind of has its own level of professionalism, and the brand might have its own personality. So for example, you've got LinkedIn. That's a site for professionals, you know? It's very professional. You've got Google Plus. To me, it's still for professionals or for people who work at Google. That's like the running joke with Google Plus. Twitter, which can be kind of professional if you really want it to be, but also people tend to get a little bit more humorous and they'll let go or say really inflammatory things on Twitter, right? There's Facebook, which to me can be professional, but let's be honest, there's a political post, there's this, there's that. It's not always a professional place. There's YouTube, which sure, it's used for business, it's a little professional, but it's also got a lot of garbage on there, you know? So there's a lot of stuff happening on YouTube. There's Pinterest, which is fun, and you know, you can look at wedding stuff or this or that. It's all images, not super professional, but businesses can use it. If you've got a super visual community and you want somewhere that this can host images, especially user-generated content where they're putting it up, that is an option. But you have to be careful with user-generated content, right? And then there's Instagram. Not very professional, but it's image-based, it's fun. You can do contests on there. To me, that's its biggest pro, but it is a little out there for association use. So we'll go into Facebook. What is it? It's the world's largest social network. They are in a little bit of trouble right now, but it's gonna be okay. They're not going anywhere, and that's the truth, at least not right now. So it does allow users to share and generate content and conversations. You can create events, and you can deploy targeted ads. Communities probably don't need to deploy targeted ads, but hey, it's an option, you know? It's a business. That's something businesses do. Everyone should use it, and their grandmas, literally. Everybody's on Facebook, so it's something we need to accept. It is best for exposure, customer relations, announcing specials, announcing events. There's a hurricane coming. Here's what you need to do. Bring in your lawn chairs. Whatever the case is, this can be used for this. There is a little bit of lingo. You know, there's like, there's your status. You can tag people. You can tag places. I don't even think you can poke anymore, but don't poke. It's weird, just so you know.
For clarifying poking, I have no idea what that
is. Don't poke people. Yeah. I mean, it's like flirting. If somebody pokes you, you maybe want to block them because it's odd. But in generally with Facebook, don't get poked, everybody. Post between 100 and 250 characters. If it's too long, you will get the dot, dot, dot. You'll have to expand it. Be brief, you know. Images are more powerful than just sentences, and videos are more powerful than images. So that's the general rule of thumb. If you want to be engaging and you need it really engaging, put up a video. Make sure there are no copyright problems, you know. Make sure it is owned by you, or it's something that you created or that was created for association use, or there is appropriate permission there.
And then you want the music
Can't have music. It will block it. It will block it on Instagram too. Even if it's just in the background, if it picks it up, it's amazing, really. It'll pick it up and say, nope, won't do it. You can turn off the sound though. So that's a thing. There are millions, billions of users now. A lot of it is mobile only. So you have to keep that in mind, especially with your websites. You want your websites mobile friendly. They have to be optimized to be viewed on a phone. And most of them have that capability now. But if they don't, I mean, that's important. Before you approve any website, look at it on your phone. You know, something to think of, because things will size out differently. It's part of it. 25% of Facebook users do not bother with privacy settings. That's crazy to me. No one should be able to just go and look at your entire profile. It's amazing what people can figure out. But Facebook, when monitoring a page, like a business page, Facebook will look at how quickly you respond to messages. And it will tell people, this company, which in this case the association would be, responds within 7 business days, right? That's a long time. If someone sends you a message on Facebook, even if your reply is, I will get you an answer as soon as possible, answer as soon as possible. Because it's out there telling your end users how quickly you're replying to them. Ooh, you know, so let's say it's a trash message. Do not send me a message. Reply to it. Reply to it, because it'll say that you're not replying to your customers or your community. That's a problem. So then there's Twitter. What is Twitter? It's a microblogging site. What does that mean? Real short little things. It is limited to 140 characters. That's why the president, for example, will put multiple tweets all in a row, because he has so much to say and he can't get it out in just one tweet, right? So he needed 7. But that's not really... It's okay. So anyway, who should use it? Maybe not the president, but everyone does seem to be using it, and that's great. For me personally, in a business use, I don't care for Twitter. I'm on social media every day, but guess what? I don't have time to do this multiple times a day. In truth, Twitter is most valuable if you're engaging at least 2 to 3 times a day. That's a lot to me. I mean, if you're managing a site on behalf of another company, then that might be a little much. But if you have a lot of users who have requested Twitter, you can get services that will feed into like all of your social media platforms with just one post, you know? So it can do Twitter, it can do Facebook, it can do LinkedIn, all in one sweep, which is great. But Twitter can be a lot of work. I would say unless there's a big demand for it, then maybe it's not a great solution for your community. And you can do privacy and permissions on it, which is great, but then it's just one-way communication. Again, how useful is that in a community of people trying to connect? Maybe not so useful. If it's just on Facebook, that's probably enough.
Can you talk a little bit more about Twitter? Because I'm trying to decide what board I will use for the next hurricane. Because I want to use something that I can post notices that everybody will go to.
Right.
Is Twitter good for that? I mean, I want to do something where I don't want to respond. I just want to say it.
Right.
Do people typically expect responses on Twitter, or is it just you just say what you want to say and it's just there?
Right. So Twitter is something where they'd want an immediate response. Twitter is something where somebody could go, hey, what do I need to do for the hurricane? They want something pretty immediately back. And that can be problematic. I'd say if it's on Facebook, it can get lost. That's true. But if it's like a direct message to a group, that'll go right to them. Really what I would do if it's something as serious as a hurricane, that needs to be an email or a text. You can do text automation sends. Whew, push it out.
But you get 60 people. You know?
Yeah.
I want to say, just go to this place and I'm going to update it as time goes through.
Yeah.
The power's on, you know.
Right. Twitter is probably not the best solution to that. For me, a lot of that is email. You can do text, SMS. It's not hard. It's actually pretty cost efficient to do those kinds of solutions, but you know, you have to have everybody's cell phone number. does it accept mobile? Is that a thing? I would stick with email for immediate communications, because if it's that important, it will be.
Yeah. If you get in and do emails and do all this kind of stuff.
Right. Right. In that case, Twitter might be useful if you have enough of a following. People have to be following you.
Well, you have to tell them. Hey,
yeah.
This is where it's going to be posted. Either you
yeah. And to go with the website thing, you can put up RSS feeds. It can feed onto the website as long as there are no outside users on this Twitter, as long as it's just the one manager, the admin that has been selected, right? So Twitter is a little different. You know, you got your DM, your IT. I don't know if anybody's seen that movie Chef. It's a really funny movie, and the guy gets a Twitter account, and he thinks that he's just sending a private message. No, he added, and it sent it to everyone with this food critic. It was a problem in the movie. It was a really good movie. Anyway, that's kind of the idea here. Make sure you learn the lingo. Multiple times a day, like I was saying, it is very fast demographic. It is growing, 55 to 64, that's the age. Brevity, personality, all important. If you have kind of boring messaging, going to fall on deaf ears, you know. Then there's LinkedIn. It's a social network for professionals. It's mostly meant for businesses, resumes, you know, candidates, that kind of thing. A management company will most definitely have a LinkedIn page, I would think. But does your association need it? Maybe. Are most of the people who live in your community on LinkedIn instead of Facebook? That could be a thing, you know. So that's something to think about if this is an outlet you want to choose. The lingo is different. You've got connections, you've got the degree of your connection, you've got recommendations, and you've got endorsements. There's all sorts of stuff going on here. So it can mean a various number of things, and if you really want me to explain it, I will, but might not be totally applicable to the HOA and what the HOA needs, so I'm gonna skip it for now. But there are tips, you know, every second two new members join. It is growing very fast, so it's something to be cognizant of. You have to make sure that if you have employees of the community or of the association, if they are on this, they are on brand and they are on message. That's very important. That's going to be important for anybody managing any social media site. But on LinkedIn, this is meant for professionals, it's meant for business. So this would be especially, I would think, problematic if it was off message, off target, or if somebody who had some problems came in and did some things maliciously, right?
Could you elaborate on message, off message? I think that's super important.
Okay, great. So let's start with on brand, right? What's your brand? It's your association. I'm Wondering Woods HOA, and we have beautiful oaks and a bubbling lake, you know? So I don't wanna hear about beach man, you know, like surfs up, and you stay on brand. What's your brand? Are you all about the community? Are you about this event? Do you have shared resources or, you know, the community pool? Make sure if you have a community pool, you're engaging about things that have to do with a community pool and maybe not a community tennis court. What do they care about that? You know, you don't have one of those. You got a community pool. If you have a gym, things about the community gym. I don't care about community saunas somewhere else. We have to be consistent, you know? So no politics, no religion. Don't post content that has nothing to do with association concerns or matters. If you want to have fun with it, you can. Oh, there's the best springtime events coming up. How to best declutter for spring cleaning, right? Something like that. You can have fun. You can put engaging content on there because let's face it, a lot of HOA content can be boring. And if you've got people in your community, they don't want to hear about, oh, the new guidelines and citations have been blah, blah, blah. Oh my gosh, that's going to make a lot of people fall asleep, right? But if you say, hey, we're having a contest for the best lawn in the community this month. I mean, that's maybe a little more exciting, a little more engaging. So it is important to put branded content out there that is engaging, but you've got important content out there that you need to push too, whether that's on your website or a social media presence. And also, what you can use social media for is to push traffic back to your website. These websites are now required, right? And let's be honest, if you're not required to have it, you should have it. Even if it's something small and three pages, you should have a place where people can at least go contact us. Oh, I need to hear from somebody at this HOA. That should be kind of the least that's going on. So there is more, but you're an HOA. You don't really need it. Google Plus, it's really not as relevant for the HOA, but if you use it, great. Put on those permissions, put on the privacy settings. Pinterest, that can get a little crazy. There's a lot of ads, I don't know, unless you've got the most spectacular and beautiful photos that you want the world to see of your community, probably wouldn't go for it. YouTube, you're gonna wanna create your own channel. You're gonna wanna have a lot of privacy settings because really you're gonna use YouTube to push video content on either your website or your social sites. Instagram, again, it can be engaged, but Instagram is very engaging. You're gonna get a lot of communication. You're gonna get a lot of people commenting and tagging you in things. It's probably not great for an HOA. But there are some facts to think about. Establishing an open line of communication to reach as many owners as possible is key to resolving issues and maintaining healthy communications. You want a healthy relationship with your community, especially if you know you're the board or the manager. You don't want it to be hostile, and this is a way to reach out. This is a great way to make it seem like, hey, maybe you didn't know about all these great things that were going on in the association, in the neighborhood. Here's a way to learn about it. You want to coordinate everybody on the same day for a garage sale? Boom, put it on Facebook. People will know. You want to make sure everybody knows what day is trash day? Put it on Facebook. Put it every week on Facebook, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that's important, right? Just a reminder, tomorrow's trash day. Why not? I mean, this is it's a great way, because if you're not online, people are being ignored. There are people who only get their news on their phone. There are people who only get their news on social media sites. Kind of scary, but it's true. A lot of people, especially a lot of people under 30 years old. How do I get my news? I look at my phone. I do. Now, I don't do it on Facebook, but I do look at websites for news on my phone. So that's important to consider. If you think they're getting their news from a paper flyer, they're not. If you've stuffed something in their door, they have probably crumpled it, right? But if you put it online, all of a sudden it's a little more relevant and it's a little more convenient. So I understand this is small, but that's because I pulled it right off the handout that you have. So the possibilities are endless, whether it's weather updates, seasonal tips, legislative updates, community events, recaps, visual pictures, surveys, and polls. You can put a poll out there. What kind of fence do you think we should install at the gate, you know, and let them vote? Oh, this will have no effect on our outcome choosing, right? Like, that's okay. But it is relationship building between the HOA and everyone. So it's important. But there are concerns, you know. This is a scary slide, I'm sorry. But there is potential for liability, claims of libel, defamation, emotional distress, right? Oh, the HOA targeted me, okay. Invasion of privacy and more. So that's scary, but it doesn't have to be, you know. Stay on brand, stay on target, keep your messaging relevant, and you should be fine. Now, there are some things to look out for. You do want disclaimers on your social sites, as well as your website. You want to use your privacy controls, and you want to review comments before they are posted. I don't care how great your community is and how much they love each other. No one should be able to post freely. There should be review. So that's something to think of. Another couple tips that I will say, very important. I would refrain from putting pictures of children. Even if, you know, it's something someone shares, there are free apps where you can just blur out kids' faces. That's important. You're going to want to blur on children. You're not going to want to put extremely personal information out there, right, like on a website. But let's say you take a picture of the winner of the best lawn house, right, and their license plate number is in the picture. That's no good. We don't want a license plate number with like, oh, number 718 on Broadway Street. You know, that's not great. That's personal information that's not to be out there. Get the little app that blurs things. That'll be okay as long as you have permission from the subject to be using the picture. But I would say in any case, children 18 years or younger, don't share it. If you really like the picture and you want to share it, make sure the face is blurred. It's important. So this is also on the handout. You're going to want to create your social media plan. The board as a unit needs to collectively put it together, agree on it, and vote it in. And with that in mind, that should cover how many admins are assigned to what social media vehicles. So in this plan, you need to establish which social media sites you're using, which you are not using, who the admin will be, what accounts, private or personal, are affiliated with this. So if you want to create a Facebook account that's for the association and then that links to a Facebook page, okay. But then you need to establish who has access to this password, you know? And if it is all the board members, are they all admin? Or some of them only editors? There are different levels of, you know, access to it too. So you can report content, you know, that goes into kind of the disclaimers on the site. And definitely seek legal advice. If you're not sure, just ask your attorney. You know, you pay the money, just ask them. If anything, these social media questions can be pretty quick sometimes. And usually it's gonna have the same kind of compliance things as the website. You know, it falls under the same jurisdiction largely. So that's something to consider. That's it, the end. So if you, question, sorry. Nextdoor, ah. Yes. So when I first started doing this presentation, Nextdoor was awful, right? Because there was no room for the association to be involved. It was just neighbors getting on and having a bitch fest. Yeah, so it was no good. I had heard that now they have it where the board member or maybe the manager can go in and there's like access. Is that still the case?
I haven't found it to be.
Okay.
I joined as a neighbor.
Right.
But that's what I was asking, because I have people within the community now asking if we can set up a community that door just for the community. And I'm like, I don't.
Yeah. Nextdoor has been, in my experience, as I've seen HOAs, problematic for HOAs, because it is just people getting on there and complaining about this or that, or having really unauthorized events or unauthorized
fights.
Oh my gosh. You're on my lawn. Like, that's crazy, right? Like, oh my gosh. So yeah, it is on my property line. Okay. I recommend Facebook. I recommend
so that we can determine who can post, who can complain, who can't.
No one should post. The administrator should post, right?
Because that could maybe fall in. I'm not an attorney, but that could fall into selective enforcement.
It's not if
you're controlling a certain element.
If the board members have admin access, then it is not. Or if it is in the social media plan adopted by the board that only a certain number of members or only certain members will be the administrators on this. So that's part of why a social media plan can be important, because it's an agreement, right? Right there. So nobody can get bent out of shape later because I'm not on the Facebook admin page. Okay, well, we decided already, so I'm sorry. We can only have two admin at a time. That should be more than enough. But both admin need to be schooled on brand, on topic, relevancy, inappropriate content, right? So that's something to consider for Facebook and whatever else you have. Nextdoor is still an issue, and I did hear that now you can be involved as an HOA member or as a manager and have a little bit of oversight, but I don't know all about that yet. Until then, I would really advise board members not to go on Nextdoor and say, well, I'm a member of the board and XYZ, this is really what's going on. That's just inciting anger. I mean, really, you're just inviting discussion, people, I don't know why, but when they are online, they suddenly decide that they can say things that never in their life would they utter out of their mouth in reality, right? I'm online, so I could say this horrible thing and just crazy. So with that in mind, it's difficult to monitor. And on Nextdoor, it's just open. It's just out there. I think it's a horrible way for communities to engage, but if you're controlling it, we can only deal with what you can control, right? Facebook is something we can control, the website is something we control.
Facebook on instant messaging,
yes.
As an association, can that be taken to court and, like, you know, official records be requested to see if we have a conversation with someone on instant messaging on Facebook if we delete it?
If somebody makes a records request on Facebook?
No, just a communication.
Oh. Right.
Definitely happen.
Yeah.
If it's in writing.
if I were you though, and that's something you want, like let's say somebody messages the community page and it's just crazy and you would want that available for like future use, assuming the association's in the right, what I would do is I would turn off the direct messaging feature, like the instant chat feature that really shouldn't be open on the page. Leave the direct messaging open, because even if you delete that, it can come back, you know? So I would not have the instant chat available, like you'd see in the little right-hand corner. I would leave direct messaging, that has to be open. And yeah, that should be available for future use, you know? Because you never know who could be crazy now, and then 3 years from now, suddenly, oh, well, I need this for this. Really? Because 3 years ago in this message, you were needing it for something else, whatever the case is. So, any other questions?
Lynn, something I thought about, what you were asking, I think a Facebook page, if an association has a Facebook page, that is now an official record of the association. Is that what you were getting at? Okay, because I think it's a good point, yeah, that suddenly you have a new... Suddenly you have a new official record that...
Yeah.
In the catch-all.
I would think in a subpoena situation, a direct message, it essentially is an email within Facebook, so that's easily retrievable, and why wouldn't it be requested, especially if it's pertinent? If they think they can say it on Facebook and it doesn't count, then they're wrong, right? They're wrong. Okay. All right. Well, please keep your handouts because, like I said, a lot of the questions I may not have answered, especially specifics on a page versus a group, or what will I use this for? What should my social media plan include? What kind of disclaimer? That's all on there. So if you need to reference it, definitely do. If you need my card, I have it. I have no problem answering any questions you might have later or anything you need to know. Okay? That's good for me.
Thank you, Steph. Thank you, Joshua. Thank you, Bianca. Obviously, these all have implications for our communities. I think the best way to utilize these tools is to control the narrative to some degree, right? You could say, oh man, it's really scary because bad people can say bad things or upset people. But there's a lot of ways to be positive. And we all know, when I moved into a managed community, the realtor wasn't very upfront about how everything worked. But if these things exist online, there's going to be better expectations, so when people move in, they don't get as frustrated and everyone doesn't get upset. So look at these as tools to leverage for your communities. And yeah, there's a process to learn it, but this is step one. Now Seth is an expert on websites, right?
I have one.
That's right. Technical expert. No, but Joshua, Bianca, there are other people who can help you within your own Google reviews. How many people have very positive Google reviews on all their, you know, all their business websites? I'm talking to managers right now. Yeah, no, it's tough to do. But these are all areas that people want transparency, and that's how the statute is written, right? It's about transparency for owners, too. So there are ways to manage this. It does require professional help, but this is just the first conversation. So thank you for coming. If you have any questions, make sure you get the expert's information. And I look forward to seeing y'all next month. There's going to be a great presenter, I heard. Oh, wait, no, it's me. It's going to be on insurance negotiation. So thank you for coming, and we'll see you next month.
Thanks for listening. If you could do us a huge favor and rate and subscribe, you can do it right in your iTunes app. Please shoot us an email if you have questions or topics, anything that we could help you with. Campcontact@gmail.com, C-A-A-M-P, contact@gmail.com. Thanks, and we'll catch up with you next week.